Hello, friends. We are back with another episode of Going Direct. This is episode number 62. I'm your host, L. Heffett. Good to see y'all, or good to be seen. I don't know. This week is very busy. We're prepping for the Mint Collective, which I'll talk a little bit more here in a little bit. But March is crazy. We'll get down to the release calendar a bit, but there's a lot going on here, which is pretty much par for the course, but especially this month. Also, I wanted to mention Panini, we just announced yesterday, which we're taping this earlier in the week than it's released, that there is going to be a first in our new 2023 Revolution WWE release, and that is a Kaboom of the Rock. It took over social media yesterday, hobby social media, and we're really excited about it, and we're excited by the response from the collecting community. So be on the lookout for 2023 Revolution WWE and the Kabooms that are in there, especially the Rock Kaboom. I'm not a huge wrestling collector, to put it mildly. I like wrestling. I used to watch a ton of it, but I haven't been following it as much as I do some of the other sports, so I didn't even know this was The Rock's first Kaboom, but it is, and the hobby made me very aware of that yesterday, so that's awesome. Coming up, as I mentioned, the Mint Collective, it is next week, Thursday through Sunday. Thursday is kind of like the kickoff party. We're going to be there. I don't know that we'll be there at the kickoff party. I'm sure some of us will be, but we're going to be at the event, the show for sure. We're going to have a big footprint there, so make sure to stop by the Panini booth. Say hello. I'll be there all the way until Sunday. So Thursday is the kickoff party. Friday is panels and workshops. We have three different panels going on, Panini does, at the show. We have a panel with Hasbro. Actually, this is like a workshop, in-person demo of our new NBA Prism Monopoly game, so make sure to check that out on Friday. Then we have two more panels. We have an international sales workshop, and we have a workshop with our product development team, which is going to be super cool. You guys are going to get to talk to the people that come up with these really cool products that you love. There's going to be a Q&A there if you want to ask him, like, you know, why this year for Rock to have a Kaboom, whatever, you get it. That's going to be going on Friday, so make sure to check that out. And then Saturday and Sunday are card show days, so a more traditional card show will be going on, and I will be at the Panini booth for those days too. I almost forgot. Friday, I'm going to be on a panel. It's called Collectors to Corporate. It's being moderated by our friend Christina from Card Ladder. And I'm really excited. There's some fun people on this panel, and we're going to get to talk about how we went from being collectors to being on the business side of the hobby. So that should be an interesting conversation. So that is the Mint Collective next week. This week, our release calendar, as I mentioned, it's awesome. This whole month is just crammed with good releases. Last week we had Prism Football. This week we have Origins NBA Basketball, which we're going to be opening up for the show today. We have 2022 Obsidian NFL. Obsidian is just an awesome product. I think, I want to say Wes Elliott, who was on our last episode, said that was one of his favorite, if not his favorite product. It's beautiful, always cool looking. And then 2022-23 Prism Premier League Soccer comes out this week too. For the soccer collectors, this is a big one. Premier League is as big as it gets. So that's awesome. This episode, we have an interview with Chris McGill. He is the CEO and head of research from Card Ladder. CardLadder.com, literally one of my favorite resources on the web for the hobby, for card collectors, for just doing research on your collection or cards you're looking for. It's extremely helpful. They've done an awesome job. And so we're going to have Chris here to talk about Card Ladder and just himself as a collector and the hobby in general. Without further ado, let's kick it over to the interview with Chris. All right, guys, we're here with Chris McGill. He is the CEO and head of research at CardLadder. Do you refer to it as CardLadder or CardLadder.com?
CardLadder, but I like CardLadder.com.
I figured it's more, let's get it out there.
It's just directing people where to go.
Well, Chris, first off, thank you for being here. You're a busy dude. I've been wanting to have you on the show for a while, so we finally got you in here, and I'm excited to have you sitting across from me. We got some basketball cards to open with you, which I know is your primary interest. So talk to us about CardLadder.
Sure. Well, go to CardLadder.com. That's the first piece of advice there. No, CardLadder is just kind of what we like to think of it as a 20th century price guide. So you've got price tracking for any card that's ever sold, going back to 2002. You've got collection management features. You've got indexes. You know, lots of fun stuff.
So I didn't realize you guys had prices going back all the way to 2002.
We do.
How is that possible to track like some of those older purchases that are almost two decades old?
Well, I don't want to give away.
Yeah, don't
want to give away too many secrets to give one example, the auction houses like that we track, like Golden, for example, or Heritage, they have sales histories going back, in some cases, that far.
Okay.
And so we have relationships with them. And
that makes sense. I can vouch for CardLadder. Literally, when I'm doing research, occasionally we use sales numbers on the secondary market for marketing, as you can imagine. That is my first stop is CardLadder.com. Not a sponsor of the show, but I definitely recommend the technology they've got over there. But it always blows me away at the search results I get, because I'm like, this is so good, and I love the filters. So the filters are always so handy for something like that. But y'all have done a really nice job.
Thank you, man. Yeah, no. When we were able to build out the sales history feature, which is where you can get access to the 50 million plus, and we bring in 100,000 new sales every day.
Holy smokes!
So that number just keeps ballooning.
100,000 a day.
On a normal day, maybe it's somewhere between 60 and 100.
That is, I had no idea there were even that many transactions in the hobby a day.
I mean, granted, a lot of it is, you know, dollar cards here.
Yeah.
But when you get the big blowout auctions, you know, like a Golden Elite or a PWCC Premier, one of the big Heritage ones, and or like a PWCC Weekly comes in or something, I mean, we'll get numbers in excess of 100,000 sales coming in a 24-hour period.
That is wild. Yeah. I know you guys work a lot, so we appreciate you guys tracking all those, because someone has to do it, and that is a lot of work.
Someone does have to do it. Let me tell you, there's no glory or glamour.
Right.
It's just a lot of numbers on a screen, or in my case, on a giant screen.
Those dollar sales are kind of thankless to track, but important, you know, if we're trying to stay true to...
Well, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it, and somebody's got to care about it. And, you know, sometimes in life, it's best to just say, hey, nobody wants to do this, and I kind of like it.
Yeah.
It's a good lane.
Did you grow up using Beckett Price Guide?
Of course.
Okay.
And Dr. Beckett is, like, he's the first head on my hobby Mount Rushmore.
Yes.
Let's say.
I would have to agree. He is definitely a somebody that has done so much for the hobby, and... and he's still, I see him at almost every Dallas card show I go to. Like, he definitely walks the walk, because it's not just something he, you know, dipped his toes in and then found some success and then left. Like, he is 100% still a collector. Every time I see him, he's looking through dollar boxes. I'm like,
well, you know,
there he is.
He's a legend. He's an icon. He's a man of the people. One of the most impressive things he did, hearkening back to the Beckett Price Guide, was in the 90s, I believe the circulation for each of the four major sports was in excess of 1 million copies on a monthly basis.
Mm.
So, and he was doing it in a way that, you know, he had cover photography of Hakeem Olajuwon when he was at his peak, and I think he had, you know, dozens and dozens of Jordan covers and Shaquille O'Neal covers. He really made that magazine, and by extension the hobby, look as beautiful and prestigious as anybody could have made it.
Agreed.
And you could be walking down the magazine aisle and see a Sports Illustrated with, you know, the Dream Team on the cover.
Yeah.
And then right next to it, you know, is a Beckett magazine, and it looks like it belongs. It made our hobby look great.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. It was, I think even my parents had to agree that, like, that what this obsession of mine was more sophisticated than just, you know, a pile of cardboard cards and a rubber band. Like, there is a price guide that's like a premium printed price guide that has trends and, you know, cards that are hot and prices going back to, like, you know, the 40s, I think. But
yeah,
that was I have very fond memories. And to this day, if I use a Beckett pricing, I am using hard copies of the magazines because I have some friends over there. So we have them in the office.
Absolutely.
And I still think the magazine is cool.
There's something nostalgic about having it here and, you know, just kind of flipping through.
Exactly.
And even if you're starting off looking for a price, you end up discovering things.
That's true.
You know, just
that's true.
Even as I'm flipping through to get, which is, that's the most frustrating part about that method is like, I gotta flip to the, it can take a while to get to the right page sometimes. But as I'm going, you know, it's, oh, there's a picture of this insert set. I'm like, I've never seen that before. You know, that's cool.
Right.
And then all of a sudden I'm looking at the checklist and I'm seeing who the players were in it. And, you know, so the process of discovery is something that's not the intention behind the primary use, but I think it has a huge secondary effect that if you don't really think about it, you don't even realize it's happening. And we try to make Card Ladder that way too, so that when you're using Card Ladder, there's opportunity for discovery at every turn.
I've literally had that experience on Card Ladder, searching for prices, coming across another card, maybe it's an impressive, it had an impressive finish or whatever. And then it takes you down a rabbit trail and all of a sudden you're collecting something you weren't the day before,
right.
But you know, you're now interested in something else. I love that you guys track trends a lot on Card Ladder. Talk to me about like some of the current trends we're seeing in the hobby.
Well, you know, this is the moment of sobriety. Where, you know, when the hobby was in a euphoric state of price gains that were, you know, doubling month by month, it was great and I was really excited and happy to see it because it was worrisome in the sense that it felt eminently unsustainable.
No doubt.
But it was exciting because on some level it symbolized validation for all of us who just love this hobby and just knew somewhere in our heart of hearts that if it got some more exposure, other people would see what we saw.
Well said. Yes, very well said.
So that's what I liked about it, but it was worrisome and it felt unsustainable, and it turns out it probably was. and so that's where I bring us to the moment of seriousness now, to say that prices have corrected, and to be even more blunt, in certain areas prices have crashed. Still, in many cases, higher than pre-pandemic, but nonetheless, it's just been a sobering year, I think, for anybody collecting anything. And it's been a painful year, too, for collectors like myself and Christina. I don't want to speak on behalf of you, but I wonder if you can relate.
Oh, sure.
You know, I was buying cards. We were buying cards last year when the market was at the height of all heights. And we don't have a right to complain because we also were collecting 5 years ago when the market was a fraction of what it is today. But when stuff corrected and came down, you know, we bought cards that are maybe worth 60% today of what they were, you know? And that's what the trends bear out in general, is that in different areas, it's more pronounced. So in basketball and football, you know, the highs were higher, but now the correction's been more painful. In areas like baseball and hockey, the highs never crescendoed as much, but now they don't suffer as much either. Pre-war vintage baseball keeps going up.
Is that right?
That's the one area of this market that has not really corrected.
Is that a product of the collectors who collect that, or is that a product of, you know, maybe a rarity with those items? I don't know.
That's a terrific question. You know, I can only speculate.
Okay.
But I would speculate that it's a byproduct of the people who collect it. You know, in the hobby, there's a lot of ships passing each other in the night. And when we're on Instagram, you know, and we have a lot of similar collecting interests, you know, like that Devin Booker Flawless just got pulled, right? I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, it was on Instagram. A few accounts were highlighting it. Devin Booker's rookie Flawless Logo Man autograph, one of one, just came out.
Just got pulled.
We're all going to see it. We're all going to hear about it.
You think I'd know about that?
Somebody should have sent it to you, Christina. Okay, so that just got pulled. You know, it's visible, you know. For every moment like that that happens in our community of interest, there are moments like that happening in other segments of the hobby, but mm-hmm. they're not taking place in ways that are visible to us.
Right.
And I'm privy to it to a small degree because part of my job is I have to look at big auction results that sure. happen for pre-war vintage cards. And I see price trends in those areas that are completely opposite to the stuff that we like.
No kidding.
So it's just kind of, you know, it's to say that there are areas of this hobby that just are siloed from other areas.
Right.
And you know, every day as part of Card Ladder, every night, the last task I do is I pick three cards that set an all-time high in the recent past, and those get emailed out to all Card Ladder users.
Okay.
And when you do that, like, the email that went out today had three Magic the Gathering cards.
Interesting.
That each set like $40,000 all-time highs in PSA 10s.
Wild.
I mean, while these cards are setting all-time highs, all-time, you know, you could go find another card that's selling for 50% off or more. You know, there's so many weird, anomalous things happening almost.
Yeah.
But as a collector, you know, you collect through it all. You just, I don't know if you want to talk about the Mahomes market or not. That's one that just has me scratching my head right now.
Every time that guy wins a Super Bowl, his cards go down. I am so... Is that like a run? You know, they always say, what is it? Buy, sell the news? And what is it prior to sell the news? I can't remember what this...
Buy the hype and sell the news.
Thank you. Is that a situation where people are already moving their high-end Mahomes prior to a Super Bowl in anticipation of?
I don't know, man. I think that's part of it. Like, one of Mahomes' best cards, in my opinion, is his gold vinyl Prism, of course, rookie out of 5.
Yeah. Right?
His BGS 9.5 gem mints of that card recently sold for $100,000, which is a ton of money. But at one point, that card sold for $390.
I was going to say, that sounds like a steal.
Yeah, yeah. And the timing of it really just, it doesn't line up with any rational sense of performance and legacy building. Because never has Mahomes' status in sports been higher than right now today, when he is a two-time league MVP, two-time Super Bowl champion,
right,
and a two-time Super Bowl MVP.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
It is so...
But it's like you said, it's like there is a logic to it. Part of it is that people were so, I think, especially maybe newer people, were so enthralled with the hobby, and there was so much money flowing around in so many different areas that sort of trickled over.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was... There's some speculation that crypto wealth trickled over into hobby spending a bit.
No doubt.
So I think a bit of that happened to it, and that sort of faucet got shut off. But I think there's so much excitement and enthusiasm that it had to come back, and it is pulling back, and it's weird and it's painful, but it doesn't, for me as a collector, I can't speak to how the market thinks, but for me as a collector, never has Patrick Mahomes been more collectible than right now.
Totally agree. I thought about that. You know, I like the Chiefs, so I'm always keeping my eye on Mahomes. But yeah, I just can't wrap my head around it. But that's okay. Like, to me, someone like Mahomes, who has so much value and has proven himself, what a great opportunity to just pick up some of his cards that you haven't been able to afford necessarily for a couple of years. Than now. But yeah, to explain why they're more affordable now is a tough one. But, you know, obviously all the markets are down. So it's not just our market or our hobby. But that's okay because, you know, I feel like the ship will right itself eventually. And I don't know that we'll go up to the astronomical rise we saw during COVID again, but I got to think these prices are going to go back up again. You know, there's 100,000 sales a day. Like,
there's a lot going on.
That's a lot of buying.
So that's an interesting data point that we have, is that, you know, we track sort of the aggregate of the secondary market for singles.
Okay.
We do track some product, sealed product that sells in the secondary market, but primarily our numbers are based on singles.
Okay.
And throughout 2022, the monthly aggregate sales volume, no matter whether prices were going up or down on the index side of things, just the total amount of dollars spent in the secondary market never really moved outside of $175 million to $250 million in a month. So what that sort of breaks down into is that when prices were high, less items were being purchased. And when prices came down, more items were being purchased. But the pool of available resources, it never really moved up to. I mean, 1 month it would be 240, then it would be 190, then it would be 220, then it would be 230, then it would be 195. But it never deviated. When prices came down, you know, 50% off of their high, the sales volume was pretty consistent.
That is fascinating. It would take a large amount of data to be able to track something like that. But that again, is why Card Ladder is a very useful resource.
Right. Well, you know, and you can see, like, certain things would move the market a ton. Like, if there was just, like, a huge, you know, auction that has a LeBron triple logo man from Flawless and some really big high-end cards, I mean, that month might get 15 million more than the average month just because. But by and large, it really struck me as being the case that the available amount of money being spent on the secondary market on single trading cards, it didn't really fluctuate.
Wow, that's wild to think about.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, so something I love that you guys on the Card Ladder social media put out a lot of kind of difference between high-end, low-end, and just where those markets are differing. But how for the longest time, high end wasn't dropping much, and it seemed like it was kind of the most consistent, just because there isn't that much around and there's always that demand for those really high end golds and 101s. How do you see that currently? Is there obviously it's softened a little bit, but is it still holding more than, like, lower end cards, or
over the longer haul, it's, you know, drastically outperformed lower end.
Okay.
But if you look at the last 6 months, nothing has taken a bigger hit than high end.
Really?
Yeah. So if you zoom in, high end is definitely, the high end was the last to correct.
Okay.
I'd say.
Okay.
But it's correcting right now. But if you look over a long enough haul, you know, if you expand the time horizon to, say, the last 5 years or something like that, I mean, the high end is outperformed everything. But one of the things that is holding up high end is that vintage and pre-war have a lot of high-end cards.
Okay.
So even as the Lucas and the Mahomes have experienced these corrections, and Luka's a curious case too, because he's about to get his fourth straight first team All-NBA. There's only like 30 players in NBA history to have done that. You know,
right.
So, like, you have two guys who are, like, who catalyze big moments in the hobby, who are knocking on the door of being all-time greats.
Right.
And that does, it speaks to the fact that the market is moved by many more things than just player accomplishment in the short term. But the fact that pre-worn vintage have so many high-end cards, you know, 10th year mantles and stuff that are super low pop, and that is sort of offsetting some of the high-end injuries that are happening to the market for modern stuff.
Sure.
Whereas low-end is predominantly ultra-modern.
Got it.
And so the volatility that ultra-modern brings, and it was almost like a piling-on effect, because, like, the low-end stuff was such a favorite target of of flipper culture.
Mm.
And then, you know, similar to sealed retail product that,
right.
You know, people were camping at Targets. And then,
who do we know about that?
okay. You know, so the low end has just had the hardest time finding its footing because it's like, who's the actual long-term buyer of this stuff? And that's still getting sorted out, I think.
Agreed. What is, so for us collectors out there with these kind of market fluctuations that we're seeing, do you see any really good opportunities outside of Mahomes and Luka cards right now?
I'm not a LeBron collector per se, though I have a few nice cards of his. Prism,
of course.
But his 2021 Prism Black, which features him in a Lakers uniform flexing, just a really interesting pose, that sold for about $40,000 in a recent auction. And I know that particularly well because I was the underbidder.
Okay, got it.
And when I'm the underbidder on LeBron James Grails, maybe that's a sign that market is a little too low. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's always, the way that I like to look at it as a collector is collect through the good and the bad. And at the end of the day, you know, when it's all said and done, it probably washes out, a worst case scenario.
That makes me feel better, honestly, about this market because it's so unpredictable, but...
It's
wild to think about you going after LeBron cards because I know what you collect. Let's talk about what you collect.
Okay.
So you are a well-known Michael Jordan collector
yes,
for the
I
longest
am.
Time. In fact, I want to say that was kind of your the catalyst for your re-entry 100%. Into the hobby, like full-time, as it were. So how did that happen? How did it go from maybe you weren't as active collecting to reigniting that interest in the hobby?
Well, so getting into Jordan collecting was just a byproduct of rediscovering my cards during a gap year between undergrad and law school.
Okay.
And so I found all my cards, really got into it. Still going into it. It feels weird to think about 6 or 7 years later, but Jordan, I settled on Jordan, A, because Chicago Bulls are my team by blood and the best bull ever, but also because I made a conscientious effort when I started to collect, I want to collect the best. And I want to collect the best player, and then I'm going to try to get the best cards I can of the best player. So that was the approach, and you know, that led down a lot of good paths. A lot of fortuitous decisions were made from that route.
Okay.
But after 2 or 3 years of collecting Jordan, you know, you start thinking about all the other fun parts of the hobby. You know, opening boxes.
Sure.
The interplay between live modern sports and collecting. Yeah. And with Jordan, you sort of get that because everything's measured by the measuring stick of Jordan. So you can't even have somebody win a title or an MVP without, you know, thinking about Michael Jordan somewhere in your mind. But, you know, we wanted to get involved in the active hobby scene. And just because of timing, you know, we'd been 2 or 3 years into collecting Jordan. We were ready to branch out. And we said, hey, let's start, you know, let's look at some basketball products. And that was Luka's rookie year. And it was right as Prism came out.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, we're opening those Prism hobby boxes and, you know, opening blasters and just trying to get Luka silvers. And Christina ends up pulling from a hobby box that we bought from Dave and Adam's storefront in New York.
No kidding.
She pulls Luka Orange.
Whoa!
Out of 49.
That's a big hit.
On the night that he made that corner three that he just like flicked up against Portland to send it into overtime.
Yeah.
So like she pulls this card, he's having these highlights, and we're like, hey, this is cool. Maybe we should collect this guy. And, you know, then, oh man, you know, just one thing becomes another. All of a sudden, I'm subscribe to League Pass, and I'm watching the Mavericks every night.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, oh.
Slippery slope.
Yeah, and then next thing you know, I'm living in Dallas.
Yeah. I got to say, though, back in 2018, 2019, it was a really exciting time to be a collector, especially of players that were active, because there was just this weird like bubbling up of buzz about cards. And it seemed like there were a lot of people like you and I who had stepped out for a bit and were coming back in and were seeking to collect active players because, I mean, there's something special about being able to buy a card of somebody that you can watch tonight.
Yes.
And follow their career and feel like you own a small piece of that player's career.
Yep.
Because you have a special rookie card of theirs. You know, I love that feeling. And that was something I felt because at one point in time, I was only collecting pre-war baseball. Speaking of pre-war baseball, and that was kind of the thing. I was like, this is great. I love these rare cards and names that are legendary, but it's hard to replace being able to buy an active player and follow them and watch them on TV that night, you know, and maybe open up a box of product that they could be in while you're watching a game, which is like one of my favorite pastimes. So I totally get how that went from, hey, we pulled this great parallel of this guy to
right. He's
doing awesome. There's a ton of talk about him right now. Like, let's keep on going with this. And,
totally.
And so now you are like one of the biggest, the two of you are one of the biggest Luka collecting groups.
Yep.
Collecting duos in the world.
Yes. Not
there
that there
I
aren't
say.
Many duos, but we'll take the top duo.
There you go.
Positioning. No, I mean, it's interesting what you mentioned about kind of how maybe a well-rounded collection is, you know, maybe anchored by something more from the past,
mm-hmm.
like a Michael Jordan or like pre-war vintage baseball, but then it's balanced by, you know, collecting something active, an
yes.
active player, an active team, you know, or something, being able to participate in opening new stuff when it comes out and being
sure.
able to get excited about that. And maybe that's a decent recipe to build in a collection is having a bit of both worlds. And never getting too crazy about one or the other.
Right.
Now, I say that, but I've definitely gone crazy with...
We all have
yes,
crazy.
Okay. So, this do as I say, not as I do. But maybe that's the right recipe there. And that's really interesting. Now, you have a similar dichotomy, except it's with pre-war. And then bringing that together with modern active players. But it's fun.
Jordan's different because I grew up watching him. But I do feel like there was a disconnect with like collecting Ty Cobb cards
yeah.
and then me obviously never watching him or knowing about him beyond like what I can read on the internet or maybe see in a documentary. So I do feel like there's a little bit, there is a disconnect between that and collecting somebody like Luka, who you and I can go to their game tonight
yep.
that's, you know, 20 minutes from here and actually watch him play in person. So
yeah.
I do want to ask you guys, because I follow you guys on social, obviously. You guys recently, well, Christina in particular,
yeah.
opened up a couple boxes of 2018-19 Prism, Luka's rookie year, which, as we talked about in the last episode, there's that big bounty. Went from 1.5 million, and this is for the Luka Black 1/1, which we talk about every darn episode if you don't know about it now. Was 1.5, and then I think Josh Luber maybe like upped the ante to 1.6. Am I right?
I think that's right. I think that's
okay.
right.
Okay. You guys open up a couple boxes. You threw your hat in the ring.
Somebody's got to pull
again,
it, right?
I say you guys. It was definitely Christina opening up these boxes.
She's the conductor of that
yes.
train. But look, somebody's got to pull it, right?
Yes.
At some point, somebody's going to have to, well, setting aside, taking off the tinfoil hats. Somebody has to pull that card.
Mine is permanently on my head.
I know. But that's what I think, Jeff, is at some point, that card's got to be pulled out. You know what? Why not us?
Exactly.
Well, only problem, it wasn't us.
Well,
so,
that's okay.
But, you know, it's still, sometimes you just get the itch.
Yeah.
You're just like, you know what? Why not me? You know, why can't I just take a shot?
Sure.
And hey, you know what? As to harken back to Michael Jordan, you miss all the shots you don't take. Okay?
That is a great reference.
All right, so...
Perfect quote for the moment.
So we took a shot, we missed, but you know what? You dust yourself off again, and you eventually try again. But yeah, I mean, looking at that... Well, I don't want to jump ahead if we're going to talk about the Prism Black again.
Well, oh, you know, I usually save the question for the Luka 1/1. Let me just say, first off... There is not another collection in the country that card would make the most, make more sense in than your guys' collection. You do have
can we bid with that?
Yes.
Can that?
Yeah,
can
you
that
can lead with that? Yes, like, okay. Listen, here's a clip from a podcast. Are you okay with us talking about your Luka cards?
Sure.
Okay, so you own one of the 10 Prism Golds.
In a BGS 9.5 as well.
Oh, it's such a sweet card.
Yes.
Do
you want to know the story behind that?
Do I ever. Lay it on me.
So this was the summer of 2019, right okay. after Luka's rookie year. And I was summering at a law firm in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And when you're a summer extern, there's really not much you can do because you don't know what you're doing. They're trying to train you. You're trying to show that you're not totally incompetent. But usually that just ends up in just kind of like you're sitting in the office, you know, they give you. But I had a down moment in the office. And I go to eBay. And there it is staring me in the face, this Luka Gold Prism on eBay.
Auction or bin?
Bin.
Okay, okay.
And at first I was trying to take the shortcut. I was trying to like package together a bunch of like cheaper cards to trade to the guy.
Okay.
And I pitched it to him and he's like, nah, you know, I don't really want to do that. And I was like, all right, you know.
Like other Luka cards or just some other cards?
Some Lukas, some trays. Like I remember one of them, I don't know why I remember it, but it was a tray. Prism pink fast break 50 out of 50
okay.
PSA 10. I don't
nice
know why.
Card.
Yeah, nice card. Back then, you know, much cheaper.
Yes.
But nice card. And he didn't want to do the trade, so I just said, fine, I'll just buy it. And, you know, we took the deal, we did the deal, and then the card gets shipped, and then it shows up the next day, and I just remember just thinking, like, what the heck did I just do?
Like, even back then, that's a beefy purchase.
It was, you know, I mean, I was summering at this law firm for maybe 2 months, and that was, like, a nice month of my income.
Right.
And I remember, I'm a student, so I'm really not making income. So, yeah, I just gave up half of my wages for the year, practically, to get that card.
Hey, that turned out all right, though.
You know what? It turned out all right. But that goes back to that collecting through it all. You know, collecting through the good. And because, let me tell you, we've had some other ones that help balance it out.
Got it.
From the last year or two.
The reason I bring up the gold in particular, outside of wanting to hear your story, because that's awesome. I didn't know the background on that. I think you told me a while back that obviously you're up on cards in general, but in particular that gold Prism Luka, I think you said 9 out of 10 are accounted for. Is that correct?
Yeah. So this isn't scientific or official.
Okay.
But just kind of back of the envelope, you know, talking with other collectors. I think you and I know at least, if you include Christina and I, you include the one that Coleman once owned, a couple of the other ones that we know are overseas. Mm-hmm. I think just off the top of my head, I could tell you the five individuals. I think when we sat down, this was a while ago when we were doing this, but when we looked, I think using pop reports combined with knowing which collections had them, I think 9 of the 10 are in fact accounted for.
So the reason that number is very interesting to me goes back to the Luka 101, because
yeah.
9 out of 10 of those are accounted for. That's a big portion of unopened product, you would imagine.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, if we wanted to use 90% of the golds being pulled as a proxy for how much of the product has been opened.
Yeah.
So maybe a vast majority of this product has already been opened. That definitely was a motivator for me to be like, yeah, let's go and open
yeah,
the Prism.
Exactly.
I mean, the odds now of pulling that black are so much better
you would
than
think,
they were
right.
on day one.
Okay, so I with that being said, I kind of know probably where you fall on this, but because I ask all of my guests, the 2018-19 Prism Black Luka 101 has yet to surface.
Right.
Do you think it is still an unopened product? Do you think it is in a collection, somebody who's just not interested in publicizing the fact they have it? Or is it maybe lost in a monster box somewhere and got, you know, some young kid was opening up Prism back in 2018, didn't didn't care about any of the Mavs players that were in there. Didn't think anything about the black. I know that's this is
no, no, it's not.
Didn't
it's
think
possible.
Anything about the black border. Like maybe it ended up in a monster box somewhere. And
I'm only laughing because it would be so painful.
I know it would. I don't want that to be true at all. I'm just trying to explore all possibilities.
You know, and I can't rule anything out. You know,
that, yeah.
It is weird that it hasn't shown up yet, and we do have decent reasoning to think that a lot of that product's been opened. So it's just weird that it hasn't shown up. I prefer to think that it's in a box somewhere. And that's, you know, that's why we've been opening
it up. Thank goodness. So that is.
Everybody has to do their part.
Yeah.
Everybody open a box.
That's bring far that card. And away, you know, I talk to a ton of our product development people on the show and I ask all of them who I can get a moment with. And they've all, 100% of them said they think it's still in sealed product right now. And I do think there's a weird effect with, you know, like this bounty coming out in a narrowing margin of how much of that is left. Some people are now holding on to boxes because you could essentially make the argument that it could be in their box now. And if 10% of the product roughly is left, The price of these boxes are not going down. Like they're definitely going up. The bounty made them jump up quite a bit, and just as we continue to not hit it, they're just going to go up.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's such an interesting deal. I so badly, if I was independently wealthy, maybe you guys can back this for me. I just want to do a show where each week we open a case of that product until we find it. It would be like. I'm obsessed with this show called, what is it, The Curse of Oak Island, where they're trying to find this old buried pirate treasure, I think it is. And this would be better than that,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, no, I love it.
Would you watch a show like that?
I mean, I would love to watch a show like that. It would be, and it would be controlled because if the card gets pulled in that setting, you could theoretically keep it under wraps.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the climax of that show.
You have to use it for the finale, right? You hold off. You don't number the episodes. You just, yeah.
And so if that card...
You've got your filmmaker hat going.
If that card got pulled in that show, you know, I mean, what would be better than that?
Totally agree. Okay, so we'll talk to Christina, see if she's interested.
Oh, you don't have to talk to her. She's interested.
Okay, we do have some product open. I know you're not a big box opener guy. You are a singles buyer, and that is the smartest way to go about this. But, you know, it's still fun to open products.
Oh, it's still fun.
Do you have a favorite Panini product? Safe to say it's Prizm?
That's safe to say it's Prizm.
Okay. Yep. So Origins Basketball just came out today. We're filming this on Wednesday. We're releasing it on Friday. It just went live today. Have you ever opened up Origins?
Oh, yeah.
You have?
Yep. In fact, we have a Luka second year Origins 1/1.
No kidding.
Yep.
How many Luka 1/1s do you guys have? Do you know offhand?
10, 15.
Good night. The fact that you don't know yeah, is very cool. Yeah. I love that.
I don't know exactly.
That's cool.
Maybe there's a Luka 1/1 in here.
They're beautiful. Like, they're some of our best design.
Yeah, they are. They're really nice.
We each have a box. You want to open up a box with me?
If I must.
Let's do it. You must.
Of course.
Yeah, I'm going to...
Yes, please. Don't give me any dangerous devices.
All right, man.
Now, are we opening simultaneously?
Yeah, we can open up at the same time.
All right.
I'm kind of a savage like that.
This is like when me and Christina start going. It's like, you open your pack, and then I can see what you got, and then I'll go, and then she'll go. But it usually just turns into a race.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we've had this conversation before, but it is an entirely different thing when I'm opening up at home without, like, a camera rolling. I will milk every moment of it. And, like, an obnoxious amount to where I'm thinking, like, if I was filming this, people would have tuned out a long time ago.
Yeah.
But, like, on camera, you know, we have to be respectful of people that are nice enough to watch our show.
Fair enough.
Something to remember. You're a pro. Just make sure to hold them out long enough to where Matt can zoom in and check out the card.
Oh, right.
These Origins.
Well, I started off with a bang.
You did? Okay, well, lead us off with the base. Oh.
This is a Jaden Ivey rookie card.
Oh.
Who's a terrific young player for the Detroit Pistons.
I just a quick humble brag. I got to talk to Jaden at NBA All-Star Game. Super nice, like laid-back kid.
Dude, he's flying under the radar a bit this year because the Pistons are not the class of the league, let's say. But when I've had the opportunity to watch him play, he's got it.
I like all of the Pistons' young players.
Oh, yeah.
I also think Cade Cunningham, when he comes back, I think Cade's got it too. Is it Jalen Duran, Jaden Ivey? Like, they've got a tough class. Maybe they need like that sort of veteran, but I don't know.
Well, they had Bogdanovich until he got shut down, and they were okay. I mean, they gave the Mavs some trouble.
Yeah.
On a few occasions, which was very annoying. But they have. They also recently acquired James Wiseman.
That's right.
Who's
Wiseman's stud.
Playing well, and yeah. Marvin Bagley, who was drafted ahead of Luka. So
okay,
I'm happy about that.
So the fourth base in should be a parallel. This
okay.
One's out of 25. Walker Kessler. Speaking of young talent.
Oh man.
I think I went to see the Jazz with you guys, didn't I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Walker Kessler's. He's not going to be like a Joel Embiid, you know, scoring 34 points a game.
Right.
But could he be a Rudy Gobert? You know.
Just a monster on the boards.
In defense,
yeah.
He's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
For my parallel, I got a Tyler Hero out of 49. Who's quietly having a good year. Maybe not the superstar that everybody wanted him to be quite yet. Still good.
I got this insert, LeBron James. Speaking of LeBron,
nice.
Team Origins. This is a cool looking card.
Card. I've got a mem card of Donovan Mitchell, Mr. 71 points. Just had to trump Luka's game, didn't he? Didn't he?
He didn't have a triple double that game.
True. But he even down to intentionally missing the final free throw to grab his own rebound and put it back to send it over. I mean, it was like
something, and I talk about this all the time. One of my favorite things about Luka is just the youthful joy he has and the stuff he does on the court, where I'm kind of like, it's amazing to see someone of that caliber do something like that, where I'm like, that's hilarious. That's something like my friends and I would have tried to do on like the playground,
right.
You know, and he's pulling it off in a pro game and making it look like, you know, easy. So Kennedy Chandler is my, my mem card.
Nice.
Got a jersey. And then I ended up with a darn redemption.
Nice.
But it's a big one.
Oh.
I will say that.
Okay.
Say
well,
that.
Before we get to... Yeah. Do you ever smell them?
I always smell them.
Okay.
That's one of the things. When I open up the pack is... Okay. So I grew up playing tennis. It's the same thing when you open up a can of tennis balls. There's this awesome smell that makes you think of tennis, obviously.
Yes.
I get the same out of opening packs.
And if to take it a step further then, since I'm in... like-minded company.
For sure.
Different products have different smells.
They do.
That are specific to them.
Paper stock, right?
It's
like the whatever materials and technology we're using to print those bad boys.
Exactly. Now, Origins has a faint whiff.
This is great. No, tell me about this.
It has a faint whiff.
Okay.
It's not strong.
Okay.
You know, certain Optichrome products are stronger.
Okay.
You know, and they have... Where Origins really got to get in.
What immediately comes to mind? Because they say your sense of smell is one of the most powerful senses of like recalling things. What do you think of your Luka 101 when you smell
it? No, I wish I did. There's like something a little piney to
okay,
it.
Okay.
It's also like a cardboard scent to it that takes me to like this. Oddly enough, it takes me to a specific shop we went to in Oregon. When we were touring shops in the Pacific Northwest, there was a shop in Oregon that came to mind when I sniffed that car.
You would make one of the best wine aficionados, but I also think I love that because the hobby is so good at bringing back like fun memories like that in different ways.
I have to hear, what is it?
Okay, so my redemption is Benedict Mathurin. And it is an Elevation Signatures. I don't know what this is out. I want to say it's just, well, it's going to be a numbered card, but that's a big signature. He's a stud.
He's awesome.
He is one of the product hits this year. So that it's a darn shame when I get a redemption. Darn us. But
it's only right.
But it is. It's appropriate, and I feel like I got it. We want to be honest with these. Right?
That's right.
We want you to see exactly what we're pulling.
I got a decent one.
You got a great one.
I got a Johnny Davis RPA out of 5.
And that's a cool looking patch. Three color. Yeah. Is that two color, three color?
I believe it was two color.
All right.
And
it's a bit of a Where's Waldo patch, but it's nice. So is that a piece of Washington?
Gotta be.
Gosh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's nice. He's had an underwhelming season, but it's a very, very nice card.
Let's say, but we will say his card smells like he's having a better season.
Yeah, yeah. The smell test, maybe he doesn't pass the eye test, but the smell test, he's way up there.
Dude, Chris, thank you, man. I know you guys, gosh, I had no idea you're tracking 100,000, roughly 100,000 sales a day.
Yeah.
I'm shocked you guys ever make it outside the house. Thank you for coming over here and sharing some of your time with us.
It is time to get back in. The sun is starting to get to me. Yeah.
Well, thank you, man. It's always fun talking cards with you. Having you on the podcast is something I've been wanting to do for a while. So thank you for your time, sir.
You
I appreciate you.
My pleasure.
Appreciate all the knowledge you dropped. And guys, make sure to check out cardladder.com. Once you go there, you'll understand why I'm excited about it every time I talk about it. You will love it too. It's a wonderful resource. And make sure to check out Chris and Christina on social. And we will see you guys next time.